Senate break, Senate time. Next bill we have up is Senate Bill 42. It's the reviser bill. We have our statute reviser here. If you join us at the table and introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is James Crawford. I'm the assistant reviser of statutes from your legal services office, and I'm here concerning the 1999 revisers bill. The bill is pretty cut and dried, and I'm going to try to be brief. I think that the recommended correction of greatest interest to this committee is in Section 21. On page 18 of the bill. What we're doing in Section 21 is correcting an internal reference within an appropriations bill. What happens here is that between versions, the numbering changed, and all of the numbers after a certain point shifted down by two. And this simply makes the correction to that number cross-referenced. And the bill also makes the correction retroactive to the effective date of the section being corrected. The reason why the numbers shifted down by two is that there were two effective date clauses in here that failed to receive a supermajority vote. And as a consequence, when the bill was reprinted, those two sections were taken out of the bill.
Okay.
I was going to ask if there were any questions on any of the other sections of the revisers bill, and if not, conclude my remarks.
Basically, this is technical changes from legislation that has passed previous to conform to other sections of the law that we had conflicts in. Is that a fair way to say what we have contained in the bill?
That is a fair statement of most of the sections in the bill. Some of the sections do slightly different things, but they all fall within that category of type of change.
And we had the original revisers bill was separated in judiciary, and some of the other more controversial sections were removed from here and are in separate pieces of legislation at this time making their way through the system?
That's correct. Those sections that were separated out all had a common theme, which related to criminal justice information. Those were separated into a supplemental revisers bill. That's right.
Senator Donnelly. Mr.
Chairman, if there's no questions from members of the committee, I'd move Senate Bill 42 from committee with individual recommendations and any accompanying testimonies, which I don't believe there are any.
Is there other questions of the reviser? Okay, the motion before us then is to move Senate Bill 42 from committee with individual recommendations with accompanying fiscal notes. Is there objection? We just set a Senate record for a bill. Thank you. I appreciate that.
He's persuasive.
Senate Bill 42 moves from committee. Next. Yeah. I'm sure you are. Okay, next we're going to hear the Senate Bill 84. This is an act imposing certain requirements relating to cigarette sales in the state by tobacco product manufacturers. The bill introduced by Rules Committee by request of the governor. And we have someone from Department of Law here to present the bill. I think from Department of Law. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Senator Torgerson, for the record, my name is Doug Gardner. I'm an assistant attorney general at the Department of Law. I have been primarily responsible for the tobacco litigation on behalf of the state of Alaska. I can give you an overview. I know time is we're getting late. I can give you an overview of the bill, or if you would like me just to answer questions, please tell me what the chair's preference is.
Well, start us out, I think, initially with why we are even doing this. Let's just go right to the fundamentals, and then we'll go to questions.
Okay. On November 30th of 1998, the state of Alaska, along with 46 other states, the District of Columbia, and five other jurisdictions, settled tobacco litigation, settled all of our lawsuits collectively in a master settlement agreement with the tobacco industry. The master settlement agreement has something in it called a non-participating manufacturer adjustment. And what that is it's an equation in the agreement that provides that if the industry, as a result of entering into this agreement with the state, experiences market share, then the industry is entitled to offset its payments to state by the amount of the non-participating manufacturer percentage. A non-participating manufacturer is someone that didn't sign the agreement. The way this bill is envisioned, the way it's envisioned is that any small company likely that did not sign the agreement should not be entitled to gain an advantage over those companies, a cost advantage over those companies that signed the agreement. In other words, the fear that the negotiators and the attorneys general had during the discussions and the settlement was that a small renegade manufacturer, for example, an XYZ company in California, might decide to sell cheap cigarettes, take advantage of the fact they don't have burdens under the agreement, flood the market, cause the same kind of public health problems that we've had, and be perhaps a largely judgment-proof company. It is not a very capital-intensive operation to get into the tobacco business. And so what this bill does is this bill provides for the payment of money by a non-participating manufacturer into an escrow fund so that the playing field remains level between the main manufacturers that signed the tobacco settlement, those participating manufacturers, and the non-participating manufacturers. In essence, this bill gives a company two choices. One is to sign the agreement. The other is to not sign the agreement and make payments into escrow that are equivalent to the payments that they would have made had they participated under the terms of the agreement. So I think that the importance of the Senate Finance Committee of this bill, and the reason that I think what the committee will want to know is, why is it important for the state of Alaska to have this in place? I believe that as a handout, committee members may have gotten an overview prepared by the Department of Law, which at the end of it has a hypothetical scenario which envisions the problem that could occur if this bill is not passed. The bill, if it is not passed, would expose the state of Alaska to a non-participating manufacturer adjustment. If you pass the bill, you don't have to share in any downside risk if the industry's market share drops and they seek to reduce payments to the state. It will only be those states that do not pass a qualifying model statute that will have to bear that burden. So in essence, this is a way of protecting the state's payments. It's a way of providing a mechanism for the citizens of the state to have a fund to recover against to the extent that they have claims that they prove in court and want to have a way to get money for those claims and damages from perhaps a small manufacturer. So I guess the bottom line is that were the state not to pass this, we would be subject to those non-participating manufacturer adjustments.
Can you give us an example of a non-participating manufacturer?
Well, actually, that's not an easy thing to do right now. As of this date, 99.8% of the tobacco market share is either an original participating manufacturer, in other words, one of the big four companies, or is one of the smaller companies that became a subsequent participating manufacturer. There are very few companies out there that haven't taken the deal, so to speak. The fear is in the future that there may be a smaller manufacturer or a company that's created to try and take advantage of the cost advantage. I don't know if I can answer your question better than that and say that there just aren't any small.
Answer is you can't identify any.
I can't identify any. I believe that I could return a report to the committee locating some companies after a little bit of work that haven't signed it, but they would be very, very small companies. And I'm not sure they do the business in Alaska, but I could update if you need.
Senator Donnelly has a question, but before, I mean, it appears to me like the tobacco companies have locked in their sales numbers is what they've actually done. You know, what happens if a small startup company invents the greatest and latest, whatever it is that they do, and it impacts them somehow or another on their sales, and they get to recoup some back from the states that don't sign this agreement? Senator Donnelly.
Mr. Chairman, this is the kind of bill I'd like to see the recommendations of lower committees that at previous committees, that is our policy. Can we start getting those? I think that would help us a lot in dealing with this, a lot of this legislation more expeditiously if we did have in our bill files, you know, bill reports from the previous committee.
I have.
Did you get this yourself, or staff? Did we get them all
out? Yes, passed it out with one due pass and three no recs. And the referral was Hess to finance.
I'd really appreciate if we just had this included by staff for all the bills that we do that we've already had hearings. It would help me a lot.
No, we'll think about that one. It may be an additional burden that we can't handle, but I just pulled mine off of the internet, off the bill history. Or my staff did. I didn't. I don't know how to do that.
<You're not allowed laughs>
Haven't learned that yet. Yeah. I've got to where I can run the mouse around pretty good. Okay, other questions? Senator Donna, excuse me.
Is there any public testimony?
No, I have no public testimony.
Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill 80.
Object.
Okay.
Wasn't intending on moving the bill. I wanted to bring it up so we could define some of these questions or see what the questions we had on it. Why wouldn't another way to go around this would be to set a separate tax on people that didn't sign the agreement that might be 10 times as high as what we do on normal? Why wouldn't the states consider that instead of something like this?
Mr. Chairman, I would wager to say that there's a high likelihood that we'll need to tax companies in interstate commerce at different rates where they're similarly situated and doing the same type of business, that it would likely be that the Alaska Supreme Court would find that to be not to comport with the, certainly the requirements of the Alaska Constitution and perhaps the federal Constitution as well.
But again, this is not required for us to receive the tobacco tax settlement money. Currently, is that correct?
That's correct. Passage of the bill does not, you do not need to pass the bill in order to somehow memorialize Alaska's participation in the settlement. Of course, there is a big caveat there that if the bill does not pass, then you do have the exposure to the adjustments in the future.
What is the outward timeline? I mean, if, let's say we didn't pass it this year, could we pass it 10 years from now? Or could we pass it when we have the identifiable NPN or M or whatever that is, participating manufacturer, non-participating manufacturer? Once we identified one, could we then pass the bill and still come under the requirements of the settlement?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate could, the legislature could do that. The only problem is that by the time that you, I would suggest respectfully, by the time you locate identify that problem, you wouldn't have the bill in place for the year prior to the year in which the industry requested a reduction in their payments. In other words, it might bite you before you have the bill in place, and you may be subject to that reduction
for that year.
For that year, so it might come up and catch the state.
Hasn't some of the larger tobacco companies sold off their interests? I think it was, I forget which one announced that they sold all their tobacco interest to a foreign company. How do we know that they're not going to divest themselves of some phony baloney company that's not a part of this, or you know, another corporation that they may be a majority stockholder that's not a part of this agreement now?
Mr. Chairman, there are, I believe, sufficient protections within the Master Settlement Agreement, which I have not reviewed for some months now and did not anticipate that question tonight. But there are protections in the Master Settlement Agreement that prevent what are called future affiliate transactions, which allow them to create corporate entities or do what I think you're saying is sort of create some sort of a shell game to get around.
Or just sell to another corporate, or just to sell out. I think it was Phillips that sold out their cigarette part just the last month or so, it was announced.
Food company.
Huh? It was one of the
food company.
Yeah, which one was it? But anyway, one of the big ones sold all their cigarette sales to some foreign country, and they may not be a part of this agreement. I mean, I don't know, but does that affect market share now? if they sell it to somebody that's not a part of this agreement, or does the part of this tobacco tax agreement as a participating member automatically go with the sale of the, or the, you know, divesting of the stock in that corporation?
My understanding is that the...
Nabisco, thank you. It was R.J. Reynolds from Nabisco.
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that the obligation goes with the market share. If that's a question you would like me to follow up on, that's a complicated question, which I would have to clarify by way of a letter back to the committee.
Well, I'm kind of interested in that, yes. I mean, because I can see this is a one-sided agreement to the tobacco manufacturers to lock in at 98% of the sales nationwide, and if I ever get any competition, I'm out of the deal unless you sign this agreement. It's almost like blackmail. And I understand that right now the exposure isn't very great, but if we allow them to sell their companies without the underlying agreement, then this becomes a real important piece of legislation. Senator Lehman, then Senator Green.
Doug, I have a couple questions on page 4. One, identifying the qualifying financial institutions for the escrow fund. There'll be one having no affiliation with the tobacco product manufacturer and having assets of at least $1 billion. How many institutions in Alaska meet that requirement?
I think through the chair, Senator Lehman, I think that the intention, and I guess I would answer your question this way, I think that the intention of that language was to prevent a company from somehow managing the escrow fund itself. I think the answer to your question is I don't think there are any companies, any of the smaller companies that I believe have that kind of market capitalization.
And that's what I was wondering. And I was wondering, why is it necessary to have that greater market capitalization? For what we're concerned about is, unless this is the escrow for the entire country, not necessarily just the Alaska share.
I think that is the right reading of it. I mean, I don't think this is just for the, this is just institutions for the whole country, not just for the Alaska.
Okay, well, then, I think I understand that. The other is on line 13, it may be a pet peeve of mine, but...
You on the same page?
Yes.
Okay.
Same page. It says the escrow shall be released from escrow and reversed back. And I go, okay, I know it means to revert. It means to go one direction, and I guess to go back, you're back where you started. So I know it's nitpicking, but I would suggest deleting the word back and so instruct the drafter, probably the technical name. Thank you, Chairman.
Senator Green.
Okay, I know. Was every tobacco manufacturer in the nation involved in the original suit and named?
The state of Alaska and the rest of the state primarily named the companies that made up the vast majority of the market share. There may have been very small companies that had not been in existence for the time period, the length of the tobacco experience that were not named, and were not named because of judgments about their ability to pay any judgment that we might get. In other words, we targeted those companies that we felt had most of the market share, that had done the things, the consumer protection and antitrust things that we had a case, that where we had a case against them, but we did not literally net every single small company in America.
I assume that at that time then you did not anticipate that you were going to get to a point where you would have non-participating manufacturers be an issue, but it seemed like that would have precluded having to do this legislation. Had every manufacturer been involved?
That's possible. That is a possible. I mean, that is a viable scenario which you just sketched out. I mean, when we filed suit back in the spring of 1997, we could not have envisioned this particular
did every person named in the original suit, whomever you filed this against, did they all agree to the settlement agreement?
Yes.
So this is a less than 1% or so group of manufacturers that are in business now or could possibly start a business in the future that we're concerned about?
Through the chair, Senator Green, these are companies that are in business now. I mean, obviously, the companies that could come into existence would be an infinite number. But so these are companies. This is market share today in America. 99.7%, I believe, of the market has signed, and there's just a small amount. Of course, the concern is that in the future, somebody could start a company and begin to sell cigarettes and make an end run around the master settlement agreement were this legislation not there. So without this legislation, there'd be an incentive in the minds of some to create that kind of an entity to begin doing business in that way.
Okay. Other questions of Mr. Gardner? Mr. Lehman.
Figure out what's happening here. It appears the manufacturers have to identify what's being sold into the state, replaces that in escrow and the institution. Is there any reason that we couldn't or shouldn't require that that fund be in an institution in Alaska? I mean, is that something in the master agreement that would preclude that?
I don't think there's anything in the master agreement that would preclude that. I would say that were the committee to make substantial changes to this model statute, I guess I should back up and say that this model statute was generally taken from the model provided in the Master Settlement Agreement as tailored to Alaska. The tailoring that was done in order to make it fit within our statutory scheme. Every change that was made was hard fought with our opponents to get put in. The industry has communicated to me, and I have gone to them and asked questions about changes that the House Finance Committee was considering. And the response that the industry inevitably had was, if you make changes, we will take the position that the statute is not a qualifying statute and open the door for litigation over whether or not the statute would protect the state of Alaska from the NPM adjustment that I talked about earlier. So I guess to answer your question more fully with that background in mind, if you made the change, I don't see, at least based on my understanding of this language, that there would be a problem with that in principle, but the industry would come back and say this is not a qualifying statute and we would have to butt heads with them later in litigation over it.
Is this entire settlement money handled by a third party?
Pardon me?
Is the entire settlement money handled by a third party? Or each year does the tobacco companies make one? Each one make a payment to the state of Alaska?
The money is placed into escrow, and there is an escrow agent that handles the money at a national level, and then it is put into sub-accounts and then ultimately dispersed to the state.
Would our suit then be with the escrow company because they'd be making a determination we didn't have this model statute in place?
There is an auditor. The agreement contemplates an independent auditor. The independent auditor would not give the authority to the escrow agent to make the transfer, and so that would be the place where the dispute would arise, on the desk of the auditor.
Okay, thank you. Other questions of Mr. Gardner? There are none. Thanks for hanging with us so late tonight. We will set this bill aside, and we'll bring it up at a later time. I wanted to get the Department of Law to give us their overview so we can be thinking about it.
Mr. Chairman. Chairman, just the question that you had asked me about the sale or transfer of perhaps a brand or a portion of a company's market share. My understanding is you'd like us to provide you an answer to that.
Well, I'm just, because that, in a way, would add some urgency to the bill, or maybe make us all mad that they could do that, one or the other. But
okay.
If they can manipulate their market share by divesting themselves of the liability by selling it to somebody else who's not a party to this agreement, it seems to me that somebody missed the boat on that somewhere.
I will evaluate that scenario and get something back to you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, tomorrow morning we meet at 8 a.m. We do have Senate Bill 100, which is reimbursement for public defenders, and we'll be bringing up Senate Bill 6. We have a sponsor, CS, that you'd like us to adopt. That's the disposal of state land.
In place recess.
Okay, in place recess. Don't leave. We had a brief discussion on whether or not we could postpone Senate Finance to start at 9 o'clock, but our people ready to testify have already been notified we'll be starting at 8 o'clock, so at this late date, it would be pretty hard to change that schedule. Part of our balanced budget presentations tomorrow didn't materialize or not ready, so we'll go till 9 o'clock on 100 and Senate Bill 6, and then we'll Senator Parnell will take over the chair, and we'll do public testimony on a balanced budget. And when we, if it takes the rest of the time, that's fine. It's not anticipated it would take our full finance committee. We'll come back then and finish up with 100 or 6, and we will add Senate Bill 33, the privatization bill, to the schedule and see if we can move that one out since we're on a roll. I don't anticipate bringing up any other bills that were previously heard. Senator Wilkins, my schedule for next week, our schedule for next week. We're contemplating right now, we'll have a Tuesday night meeting at 6 p.m. We'll have 8 a.m. meetings every morning, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Each night we will have Senate Finance meetings, and we will be meeting on Saturday from 10 to about 2 o'clock. That's the anticipated schedule. We're trying to make sure we can get that around closeout to other budgets, but that's we have 22 bills scheduled for next week, so we've got a lot of work to do.
Monday, Tuesday.
So we'll have that schedule out tomorrow early.
We're here to serve.
We're here to serve. Senator Parnell.
And on that, because of the backlog of bills that have built up and based on where the House is, I'm not anticipating subcommittee closeouts until Monday, Tuesday, the following week. So that's about the 13th, 14th, whatever those days are, Monday, Tuesday.
We'll save them, yeah. Well, we do have a pretty aggressive schedule next week, but these are priority, most of these are priority bills that have been identified, and it's not necessarily our backlog. They just got to us, so we need to meet and try to punch them out. So we'll see where we're at on them. So any other questions or anything else come before the committee? With that, we'll stand adjourned.